I'm going to present the results from the June 2012 track that was held in Woods Hole and cover off the Eastern Georges Bank Cod, Eastern Georges Bank Haddock, and the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder assessment results. Just quickly first, the U.S.-Canada allocation shares. The Transboundary Management Guidance Committee, the TMGC, agreed to these allocation share formulas back in 2002, and based on the formulation for, I'm sorry, it's difficult to see this, but in the yellow at the bottom of the graph, this year, or not for 2013, the U.S. share of the cod quota will be 16%. Which is a decline from the 2012 quota. Haddock will be 38% share of the quota, a decline from the 43% in the previous 2012. And for yellowtail flounder, the share will be 43%, decline from the 49% in 2012. Going over the Eastern Georges Bank management unit results, So the management unit, we include all removals from statistical areas 561 and 562 that are captured by the U.S., and all the removals by Canada from statistical area 551 and 552. So that's the Eastern Georges Bank component. In this assessment, at the benchmark held in 2009, we agreed to two VPA formulations. We call them split M.2 and split M.5. The M.2 model is a model where the natural mortality is set at 0.2 for all ages. In the M.5 model, the M is also set for to M.2 except after 1994, where the M is increased for only ages 6 plus to 0.5. In both models, the survey indices are split between 1993 and 1994, and the resulting change in survey catchability is considered to be an alias for an unknown mechanism that produces a better fitting model. We don't believe that the catchability actually changed in the survey, but it's an artifact that to address the retrospective issue. In the benchmark, we agreed that when we go forward, we would consider both model formulations for stock status and catch advice. And both of these models have a retrospective bias, more than you would want to see, perhaps, in an assessment, which is why we initially split these surveys. And the bias is to overestimate B, biomass, and to underestimate F, or fishing mortality. Looking at the catch, the U.S. and Canada in 2011, the total catch was 1,037 metric tons. That's based on the calendar year. The U.S. caught 294 metric tons, and of that, 267 metric tons were from landings and 27 metric tons were from discards. And the Canadian fishery caught 743 metric tons, 702 of landings, and 42 of discards. And for the U.S., the quota for the fishing year was 200 metric tons, and we caught 82% of that quota. And all the numbers I just gave you above are all based on calendar year, so they don't quite jibe there. The Canadian fishery caught 87% of their 850 metric ton quota, which was on a calendar year. Now, looking at fishing mortality in this figure, we see that the line here is FRF. and the two lines are the 0.2 model in the darker line, and 0.5 is the magenta. These are the results indicate that in both models that F is above F ref. In the 0.2 model, F was 0.49. In the 0.5 model, F was 0.28. Both models give you the same trends, and the F is the lowest on record, but still above FREF. And F has been above FREF, which is 0.18, for the entire time series, as you can see here. Looking at the 3-plus biomass, the biomass is the lines here, and recruitment are the bars. But for now, just looking at the lines, we see that for the 0.2 model, the biomass was about 2,800 metric tons in 2012, and the 0.5 model estimates it to be about 4,000 metric tons. And the increase we see between 2004 and 2007 is due to the 2000 year class that moved through, but now the biomass is decreasing. And the biomass is the second lowest in both models. Looking at the comparison of the survey trends and the VPA 1-plus biomass, we see that we've been fluctuating at low values since 1994, and the 2012 spring Northeast Fisheries Science Center and the DFO estimates are among the lowest in the time series, as you can see over here. Looking at recruitment, which are the bars, we've had poor recruitment in this management unit since the 1990 year class. And five of the seven lowest recruitments have occurred since the 2003 year class, all these recruitments here. The 2010 year class is estimated currently to be similar to the 2003. However, as in all assessments, your terminal year estimate of recruitment is highly uncertain, regardless if you have a retrospective or not. And if you do have a retrospective, then it's even more uncertain. So this estimate, which is around 3 to 4 million, is likely to be reduced as we get more information on the year class. Looking at the stock-recruit relationship, you can see the stock, we remain at low productivity. The 2010 year class is down in the lower quadrant here. We continue to have low weights at age, and you can see from this graph that recruitment is more likely, higher recruitment is more likely at a biomass greater than 30,000 metric tons. And the assumption behind having more biomass is that you actually have an expanded age structure, and if you have an expanded age structure, you're going to have more eggs in the water, the fecundity is higher, more potential fecundity. And the odds of matching with good environmental conditions will increase. Looking at the catch projections in the recent years, catches based on these two formulations have not reduced fishing mortality below FREF and have not had the expected effect on the H3-plus biomass of the SSB. Then, given the retrospective bias, the track recommends that basing their 2013 catches on the adjusted projections rather than the unadjusted projection results. And just to go quickly over the harvest strategy, which the TMGC adopted, is a strategy to maintain a low to neutral risk of exceeding the fishing mortality reference point of FREF of 0.18. This was established in 2002. It's a negotiated value. And in addition, when stock conditions are poor, fishing mortality should be further reduced to promote rebuilding. The track does not have a biomass rebuilding target like we do in the domestic U.S. stock. So looking at the catch projections, The first two rows here are grayed out. These are the model results unadjusted. And as I said in the previous slide, the track recommends using the adjusted models that were adjusted for the retrospective bias, and are called row adjusted here. So the red is a 0.2 model, the blue is a 0.5. And if you're under an assumption of looking at a 50% probability of not exceeding FREF, implies that the catch quota should be around 400 for the row adjusted 0.2 model and 775 metric tons for the 0.5 model. Looking at the probability of a biomass increase, again, the row adjusted model at the bottom of the figure here, if you're looking for a 20% increase, a neutral risk of not increasing more than 20%, then you would set the quota at 507 metric tons, or at the 0.5 model, 400 metric tons. You can see looking at a 10% increase in biomass is the is 900 metric tons, which is far above the F the quota that you would have gotten. I mean, you're clearly be overfishing here at 900, given that 50% probability is at 400 to 775. So just this is essentially the same figure. So if you so to not exceed an FREF and achieve a 20% increase in biomass, this implies a catch of less than 400 from these two models. And this table, it's hard to read, it's essentially the other two figures that I've shown you before. It's in the term in the TSR that I think most of you probably have, and it just lays out the different probabilities as you increase the quota. Obviously, as you the higher quota the set, the less percent increase in biomass. So in summary, the F has reduced, but it's still above FREF in this management unit. Recent recruitment is generally poor, with the exception of the 2003 year class, which is mostly passed through the fishery, and the potential of the 2010 year class. Both of these are the highest since 2000, and the 2010 is highly uncertain, and we need a couple more years to see what that year class will turn out to be. We continue to have reduced weights at age. The biomass is at the second lowest in the time series, which hampers improved recruitment. We have low numbers of 7-plus fish, and rebuilding will not occur without improved recruitment. And TRAC recommends considering both models and using the bias-adjusted projection results. And based on this, not exceeding FREF and achieving a 20% increase in biomass implies catches of less than 400 metric tons. So that's the haddock. That was the cod. Move on to the haddock. Again, this is the same management unit as the cod. U.S. Landings and discards from statistical areas 561 and 562, and Canadian landings and discards from statistical area 551 and 552. Looking at the catch in the calendar year, the total 2011 catch for both countries was 12,655 metric tons. The U.S. landed 1,400 metric tons. Canada landed 11,247 metric tons. On the fishing year, a quota for the U.S. Landed or caught 12% of their quota, and Canada caught 90% of their quota. Looking at the fishing mortality, which is the line here, you see that in the fishing mortality in 2011 was 0.14, which is below FREF, which is this dotted line here. And we've been below or near FREF since 1995. And the differences between this line prior to 1990 or 2000 or so, the F was averaged on ages 4 to 8, but with the large year class, 2003, that came in, the growth slowed down, and now we average the ages 5 to 8. Looking at biomass and recruitment from a historical perspective, we have data back to the 1930s. And here, recruitment are the bars, and biomass is the line. We can see that the adult three-blessed biomass decreased to 62,200 metric tons in 2005 and subsequently increased to 172,700 metric tons in 2009 due to the large 2003 year class. And at the beginning of 2012, the adult biomass had decreased to 70,700 metric tons. But the 2003 and the 2010 year classes are exceptionally large, and the 2011 year class is very strong. So this stock is, or management unit is doing well, as you can see. Looking at the recruitment and biomass relationship, we can see that recruitment is highly variable, but it's generally been higher when adult biomass has been above 40,000 metric tons, which has been the case since 2001. The 2012 3-plus biomass is estimated to be 70,700 metric tons, and the 2000 year class is estimated to be at 328 million, and the preliminary estimates in the 2010 are 589 million, which is the highest year class that we've ever seen for haddock. But again, this number will be adjusted somewhat in the next few years, but there's not a strong retrospective in this assessment, so it won't change dramatically. These are the year classes. Looking at the projection for the catch in 2013, if you assume the 2012 catch is equal to the 16,000 metric ton quota, the combined Canada-U.S. catch of 10,400 metric tons in 2013 would result in neutral risk that the 2013 fishing mortality would exceed FREF, which is 0.26 for this management unit. We don't expect any biomass decline for this for haddock here in 2014, so that's not presented. And the 2010 year class, is, as you saw, was quite large, so we use the 2013 year class values for growth for the 2010 because the growth is likely to be slower, lower, given the magnitude of the year class. And the 2003 year class is now in the 9-plus age group, so that we assume there's no growth for the year class and that there will be reduced availability of ages 9-plus to the fishery. If that's not quite true, then it's possible that we would be above FREF next year if that assumption on the PR is not correct. So in summary, the exploitation is well below FREF during 2007 to 11. The 2011 F was 0.14, well below the FREF at 0.26. The preliminary estimate of 2010 is exceptional at 589 million. And the 2011 year class is strong. Except for the 2011 year classes and the 2003 2010 year classes, recruitment is fluctuated between 2.9 and 29 million fish at age one, but the stock, obviously there's a lot of recruitment out there. Adult biomass is projected to be 306,000 metric tons, a record high at the beginning of 2014. The FREF catch is at 10,400 metric tons, and fishing up to FREF does not pose a conservation concern for this for the this management unit. And fish condition in the stock has been below this time series average since 2003. Moving on to yellowtail flounder. In this case, this Georges Bank yellowtail flounder assessment is all the removals from for U.S. catches from statistical areas 522, 525, 561, and 62. So there's two more statistical areas to the west that are included in the Georges Bank assessment, plus the Canadian catches from 551 and 552. Looking at the combined Canada and U.S. catches in 2011, a total of 1,169 metric tons were caught. This is less than a 1% increase from the 1160 that was taken in 2010, and discards are 21% of the catch. The U.S. catch was 1,096 metric tons, 904 of landings, 192 on discards. And the Canadian catch was 73 metric tons, 22 of landings, and 50 of discards. Looking at the quota, the U.S. Took 95% of their quota, and the Canada took 9% of their quota. Looking at the biomass for this stock, we see that in 1995, this stock was at a low biomass level, about 2,100 metric tons, increased with some stronger year classes to almost 11,000 metric tons in 2003, and then declined again in 2006 to 2,700 metric tons, and has since increased slightly to 4,300 metric tons in 2012. Looking at the surveys, there's four surveys that are used in this assessment, the Center Spring and Fall Survey, the DFO Survey, and the Scallop Survey. And the point of this slide is just to show that to the very left, you can see all four surveys are showing similar trends in abundance. The center panel is just showing the uncertainty expressed as a coefficient of variation. You can see the high you can see that the in the center at these high tows that occurred in, I believe it was 2008 and 2009, here in the DFO survey also have very high uncertainty associated with those. But otherwise, we have similar estimates of uncertainty across all years and all surveys. And the other six panels to the right are for the different age groups, which again show good agreement between all surveys for the abundance at age. Looking at the spawning stock biomass and recruitment, in 2011, the SSB was estimated to be 4,600 metric tons. If this is adjusted for the retrospective bias, that would be 1,700 metric tons. Looking at the recruitment, the average recruitment from 1973 to 2011 has been 19 million fish, and since 2002, recruitment has been below average. The 2005 year class was at 10.8 million, and the 2009 and 2010 year classes are at 3.1 or 3 million, the lowest in the time series. The 2010 year class is about 3 million. When you adjust that for retrospective bias, it's about 1.7 million recruits. And you can see that this the increase we've seen in the biomass since 2005 or 6 has been due to the growth of the 2005 year class is starting to level out now, since we haven't had any recruitment behind that that's as strong as the 2005 year class was. Looking at fishing mortality, we can see that F has been above 1 between 1973 to 1994, and between 96 and 2003 it declined to between 0.5 and 0.97. From 2004 to 2007, we're still above 1. And then between 2008 and 2010, F dropped to around greater than 0.5. And in 2011, F is at 0.31. It has declined, but it's still above FRF. And if this is rho adjusted, we're still above FRF. So in this model, this assessment, the split series formulation was approved at the last benchmark, and that's what's used to estimate current stock size and fishing mortality. In recent years, as we said about the Eastern Georgia's Bank Cod, the catch projections based on the model have not reduced fishing mortality below FRF and have not had the expected effect on the H3-plus biomass. If the 2013 catch quota is set based on the unadjusted model projections, this pattern of failing to achieve management objectives is likely to continue, given the retrospective pattern we see in this assessment. So the TRAC recommends basing 2013 catches on the adjusted model projections and not the unadjusted, as we did with the cod. And again, the harvest strategy adopted by TMGC is to maintain a low to neutral risk of exceeding the FRF, which is 0.25 for this stock. Again, this is a negotiated value. And further, when the stock's in poor condition, to reduce fishing mortality further to promote rebuilding. So given the increased magnitude of the retrospective in this assessment, five sensitivities were presented to address the retrospective bias in characterizing uncertainty and risk and catch advice. So looking at this, the split, this gray column and the single are the unadjusted assessments, which we recommend not using for catch projections, but to go forward with the adjusted split, adjusted single. And then there's three other sensitivities, which I'll explain. So the idea was to use these five sensitivities to present the catch advice. The differences between this, the adjusted split and the adjusted single model, the assessment is run. We get the estimates of fish mortality and abundance, biomass, and we correct them for the retrospective bias. The other three sensitivities, one is the C-mult is the catch multiplier, M-mult, natural mortality multiplier, and then a combination MNC of catch and mortality. In those three sensitivities, the data is adjusted before it goes into the model. So the bottom line from this is that if you look at these five models, no matter if you adjust the data going into the model or you adjust the results coming out of the model, they essentially point you all in the same direction. So looking at a 200 metric ton quota, you have a high probability of not overfishing at 200 metric tons here. You have a neutral risk in this sensitivity, and all the other ones you have a zero probability of overfishing. And looking at the biomass increase, you have at least an increase of 10% is 50% or higher in all models. If you go to a 500 metric ton quota, only one of the five models has a probability of not overfishing. However, on the other hand, four of the five models' sensitivities show a biomass increase, so there's a trade-off. At 500 metric tons, you may be overfishing, but you would expect to get some biomass increase. So this is the same just in figure form, the same table I showed you. On the left is the risk of exceeding FREF. On the right is the relative change in biomass. So again, if you look at this 200, this line, if I could keep my hand steady, is the 200 metric tons. You can see from that that you have a 0 to 50% risk of overfishing, whereas you go to 500, you have 100% risk of overfishing at 4 out of the 5 models. And the same over here with the biomass at 200 metric tons. You get at least 10% or more growth at 200 metric tons, and at 500 metric tons, there's one model where you get no growth, but the other four, you do get growth of, say, 20% or more. So there's some caveats. When you do a projection, you have to make assumptions. You have to make assumptions about the maturity, the weight, and the recruitment. And the benchmark model projection, the assumption was set, agreed to use the, well, it wasn't an assumption. It was agreed to use the 10-year average recruitment to go forward in your projection. So when we do that in this model and assume 10-year average, for 2012, you come up with $7.3 million. If you bias correct this, when you go to do the projections, you bias correct all ages, and when you bias correct the recruitment, it becomes $2.7 million. But this results in a high probability of increased biomass from 2013 to 2014. However, half of that biomass is coming from this 2012 year class, so it's all the biomass is from 1 year class. An alternative projection that the PDT actually did, and I just wanted to show this to you, is if you were to base that the recruitment on a 5-year average rather than a 10-year average, it would be 5.2 million. I guess the logic here is, you know, the likelihood of getting what you got the last 5 years, it's probably more likely than what you got 10 years ago. So when you do this, the 5-year average recruitment is 5.2. If you adjust it, it's 1.9. And you run this through the projection, this results in a probability of increased biomass from 2013 to 2014 of just about zero. So you want to keep that in mind and think that projections presented may be optimistic given this assumption on what the recruitment is. It doesn't affect the first year, but it comes in the second and third year of the projection. And just at the bottom here, at 200 metric tons, the F is about 0.26, close to the FREF of 0.25. At 500 metric tons, F would be 0.8. And at 600 metric tons, it would be 1.03. And this is all based on the 10-year average projection. So in summary, the catch in 2011 was well below the quota. The surveys are up slightly from last year. The F, although it's been reduced, it's still above FREF. The biomass had been increasing, but it's still low. Recruitment has been poor in recent years, and we have this retrospective bias in this assessment. And the 2013 catch advice was 200 metric tons to 400 to 500 metric tons. And that's my presentation.
Questions for Loretta? Dave Gaethel.
Loretta, I'm having a hard time understanding this split M in both the cod and the yellowtail. If I understand it right, basically what people are saying is that when the fish are born, they have a natural mortality of 0.2, and that goes along for 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years, and then all of a sudden it jumps up to 0.5. Is that correct?
Well, that would be the literal translation looking at this. That's the way it's set up. The model was set up. Not everyone in the track agrees with that. We have no mechanistic explanation of why it would jump between ages 5 and 6 to 0.5 from 0.2. So this was not an issue we couldn't resolve, which is partly why we went forward with two models. Having said that, we have requested and expect to have a benchmark review of this assessment sometime after January and before next June, and hopefully we'll have one model and go forward with that. We also, as you're probably aware, have a benchmark in progress for Georgia's Bank COT as a whole, and we'll have Canadian participation there, and then we, of course, participate in the Eastern Georgia's Bank. So that benchmark will be held in February or March.
Okay. So by saying there's no mechanistic proof of this, but we're basically saying is we don't have any real fish to prove it. This is a way to make the model work. In other words, the evidence, we don't have real fish evidence. The fish are disappearing, but we don't know where or why. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. By putting the 0.5 in, it does improve the retrospective, and that's part of the, I think, reasoning behind. It's a way to adjust the retrospective.
Okay. So the only what I'm trying to figure out is where these fish are going. I mean, absent something idiotic like aliens beaming them up. They could be emigrating to some other place and turning into some other fish. I mean, in other words, maybe the older cod are leaving and becoming, I don't know, Gulf of Maine cod or Bay of Fundy cod, and the yellowtails are doing something similar. Is that a possibility?
I don't think so. I don't think these fish are turning into other fish, if that's really what you're asking me. Based on the survey, we see no large fish in the survey. We see no large fish in the catch. So it would appear that, based on this model, that we don't have the age structure there. It's typically, these fish have been overfished. These stocks have been overfished for a long time. And I would conclude that they're overfished, that we're setting our quotas too high, which is why the track recommended going to this row adjusted projection, so that we can see if we can get down low enough to see if we get some age structure expansion.
I'm not going to go any further, but I think there have got to be other explanations than simply they get caught when we don't have any evidence that they get caught. I think we've got to at least start looking for other solutions to this issue.
Well, the Canadians don't see any cod. There's no, if they're immigrating, leaving the area, we're not seeing any, they're not showing up in Canadian fisheries and Scotian shelf.
Well, I mean, the tagging indicated that there's a pretty good interchange between the Bay of Fundy and Eastern Georges. So we haven't done any tagging in the last 5 years. So, again, I'll just make the statement that I think we've got to start looking other places. And doing some more research to figure out what's going on here.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. Any questions for Loretta? Drew?
Thank you. Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. Obviously, we've been following and very concerned about the Georges Bank yellowtail assessment. Earlier during the SSC presentation, you heard that all the signals were bad for Georges Bank yellowtail. However, I would refer you to the slide in this presentation that shows the survey indices for Georges Bank yellowtail, and you can see they're actually rather level. There's no precipitous drop. What the survey indices do also show you, there's a lot of noise within them, which gets back earlier to Ron's point. There just aren't enough actual toes in the surveys in these areas, and that's why we have such a noisy level in the survey. And I would also point to the summary slide of this presentation that says biomass is increasing. So the earlier statement that all signs are negative in yellowtail doesn't match up with this presentation. That being said, recruitment does look poor in this fishery, and I certainly concede that, but to say that everything looks poor is just not an accurate statement. Would also draw your attention to the fishing mortality chart. Overlaid in the fishing mortality chart is a bar graph of catch of U.S. and Canada. If you look from 2005 out, Canadian catch is on the graph. You can barely see it, but it's right there at the bottom. It's a very, very low level. And looking at that, I would remind you, we are now giving 56% of this stock to the Canadians. Good job by us. That's really good. They're not catching anywhere near their quota. They're catching a small fraction compared to us, but we are getting 44% of this scarce resource. It's also hearing the advice that comes out of this and then trying to marry it up with the SSC conversation, the earlier presentation in the SSC. It's almost as if we were in two different worlds. The SSC conversation about the stock is completely different and a different focus and different results than this. You know, the SSC came out with the third option that's not even discussed in this, of the 1150 and looking at no directed fisheries on this. I mean, in fact, the SSC only put out that 1150 number because they had to. They didn't want to set an ABC on this catch because they felt that this assessment was so uncertain that you were better off trying to minimize your catch of these species and then seeing what came out as a result. And if you caught more than you thought you would, then you're probably underestimating the stock. And if you didn't catch many, then you're probably overestimating the stock. I mean, that was the bulk of the SSC conversation. And that's really lost in this kind of present. It just, we need to somehow harmonize. And I understand this is part of an international understanding and everything, but the lack of harmony between our own domestic process and this is causing a tremendous amount of confusion and conflicting advice. And it's, I just pointed out.
I'd just like to respond. There were several points there, but one about the biomass increasing in the last slide, that's relative to since 2005, the biomass had increased, but I also noted that that was based on the growth of the 2005-year class, and given that the recruitment that's coming behind it, which is very poor, we don't expect that the biomass is going to increase. You can see it's starting to level off. And given there's no recruitment there, we can't really expect the biomass to increase. If there is any increase, it will be based on the growth of those year classes and low effort on the fishery, on the stock. And also, I guess the issue of doing more stations, that came up in the track a couple years ago. An analysis was done by Chris Legault looking at the relative efficiency of the DFO survey versus the center surveys. And the DFO survey actually allocates like twice as many stations in one of their strata. So they have more stations than you might expect. And we get the same, the results of that analysis show that the relative efficiency between the three surveys was equivalent, and you can see from the figures that we get the same trends, even if they're catching, even though they have more stations, we're getting the same results. It's just reducing the variability in your estimate of the abundance. And there were several other issues. I don't know if Chris wants to address any of them or if they need to be addressed.
Anyone else in the audience? Rich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Rich Canastro, based in New England. What the science is saying and what the boats are telling us in New Bedford is just two different forms of reality. This take place of last year And I'm always questioned on this because you cannot roll over any quota on the U.S.-Canada shared stocks. The boats were avoiding yellowtail. Scallopers had their yellowtail hot spots. And it just amazes me that a stock that's so in such trouble, we have to have these programs to avoid them. If there was a problem, I don't think we'd need these programs. But my point is at the end of last year, the fishermen did a good job staying away from the yellowtail come April before May 1st of the fishing year 2012. Boats were saying to themselves, well, do I leave them in the ocean or do I bring them in? I'm getting charged for them anyways. We had 30,000-pound trips, 40,000-pound trips. We even had a 50,000-pound trip, 7 days fishing. The fishermen know where the yellowtails are, and these surveys are just not doing it any justice. So, again, think about it. Let's put some common sense here. Yellowtail avoidance program. These aren't dolphins. These aren't turtles. These aren't whales. They're yellowtail. They are out there. We need better science to show what's happening out in the oceans. Fishermen are catching them in 70 fathoms, 90 fathoms. You never thought of that 2 years ago, 3 years ago. But they exist, but we're just not seeing them on the surveys. So we've got to get back to common sense, and I do agree with David, you know, where are they going? You know, when the waters chill down and we get a five-year-old codfish and a seven-year-old yellowtail showing back up again, you know, where'd they go? So the last thing I just want to make a point of is that when cat shears came, I know I mentioned this before, we were put into a system that no one knew. We had to learn the system. We had to teach nymphs on that system. And we were promised opening these closed areas, more flexibility, on being on a hard tack. Industry kept up with its deal, but the fishery service hasn't. And I'm hoping that Mayor Bullard will be able to do something to help out the industry. Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. David Pierce.
Yeah, Loretta, thank you. Bob, the split series approach to deal with the retrospective pattern at one time did do away with the retrospective pattern or minimized it rather dramatically, and that was, of course, something everyone had hoped for, that is to reduce that pattern. But now the retrospective pattern has come up again, as you indicate in your summary, that there's a major retrospective issue. So I'm still struggling with how to deal with that major retrospective issue and the fact that even though we split the survey, the time series, it's back again. Could you comment on that and help us understand what might be causing this return of the retrospective issue and what's the meaning of it? The usefulness of the assessment. That's my point. How useful is the assessment in light of the fact that here it is again, back despite all of the attempts to do away with it by adjusting the data?
Well, I think the assessment is acceptable. It's just it does have a retrospective. If the model wasn't working, then the diagnostics wouldn't tell us that there was a retrospective issue, and then we'd really be in trouble. The diagnostics are telling us there's a retrospective problem, and greater minds than mine have tried to figure out what's causing a retrospective, so I won't attempt to say. I mean, it's not accounting for removals, basically, and somehow either mortality, catch, immigration. But as far as the track, you know, our recommendation is to adjust for the retrospective and use your row-adjusted projections to go forward. there's been work done by ICE's working group looking at retrospective issues. They've shown in simulations where you start out with the truth, you perturbate the fishery, you get a retrospective, you adjust for that retrospective either by changing the mortality, changing the catch. However you adjust for it, you end up approaching your goal, the FRF or your FNSY, whatever your F reference is, you're more likely to get to that goal than not adjusting. So given what we have in front of us, we recognize there's an issue. That's why we requested a benchmark for the Eastern Georges. And even when we introduced these two models, we said when the 2003 year class had reached an older ages that we would go back and address this and try to see if that helped us to interpret what's going on with the natural mortality. These aren't easy questions to answer, but we hope to, by trying a different model, you know, looking at trying to account for historical discards, et cetera, that we can come to a model that's doesn't have a retrospective, but there's no guarantee. But in the short term, by applying the retro-adjusted numbers in your projection, should help us get towards our goal of achieving FRF.
Yeah, I appreciate all the energy that has gone into this. Certainly it's a very thorny issue, a real problem. But perhaps Dr. Karp can add to this discussion by describing what the center is doing with regards to Georges Bank Yellowtail in the context of ICES. I think Dr. Karp has suggested that this particular stock be highlighted as something that should receive much more attention, international attention, to help us deal with this issue. So, Mr. Chairman, if it's all right with you, I'd appreciate it if Dr. Karp could tell us what's happening with the Georges Bank Yellowtail at the international level being promoted by the center.
Well, thank you, Dr. Pierce, for giving me the opportunity, and I was waiting just to offer some comments until the discussion was over. But yes, I mean, we're faced with a short-term problem and a long-term problem. The short-term problem is we have as an assessment model which is performing at an acceptable level but clearly is problematic. So we need to look at how we can improve the assessment model to address exactly the kinds of concerns that Loretta's been highlighting. And as it happens, there's a conference that's going to take place in Boston in the middle of next year, which is an international conference on stock assessment methodology, which is an ICES. It's sponsored by many, including ICES, NOAA, FAO. And part of the process in preparing for that meeting is to take a number of candidate stocks worldwide and look at them very, very carefully in terms of how they perform or how applying a range of different assessment approaches to those stocks. And Eastern Georges Bank Yellowtail seems to be a very good candidate for that, and we're working on putting a team together to do exactly that. That process, of course, will be open, and we'll keep everybody around the table informed. But it is an opportunity for us to bring not just our best and brightest together, but to bring some international perspective to this problem, which, as Loretta mentions, is not unique to this region at all.
Anyone else on the council for Loretta? Loretta, thank you again. Tom?